It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Not only do enthusiastic gamers all over the world spend countless hours glued to a screen playing complex video games, watching other people play video games is also becoming popular. And a lot of those gamers dream of being the people that other gamers stop everything to watch. This hour, we're going to talk about the growing world of esports. A little later in the hour, I'll talk with a video game journalist. But first, Lawrence Tabak is here. He's author of the new young adult novel, In Real Life. It's an esports novel, and I believe the very first of its kind. Hello, Lawrence.
Hello, it's great to be back at Iowa.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And let's talk a little bit about your experience with video games. First, both of your sons are gamers, right?
Well, yes, and to some extent my experience is vicarious as a result. But I have two avid gamers in my household, and one of them actually has gone on to make something of a career of it.
Now, when that started to happen, was there a moment when you realized, hey, this is more than him just doing something that he has fun with?
No, that would be too prescient. Instead, it's more of an example of sort of the irony of parental advice in which everything gets turned upside down, because I actually was pretty consistent in telling him he should be spending his time doing something more constructive. So I was a typical parent, I guess.
And he continued to play. When did he tell you that he was one of the top players in the country, one of the top players in the world, in fact?
Well, this occurred while he was in school. He had attended the University of Wisconsin. In his final semester, he was only needed one course to graduate. And that course was called Black American Music. So he was having quite a bit of spare time available to him at that point, in between listening to Marvin Gaye.
Right. That sounds like a lovely semester.
Which is kind of like my college experience, except I didn't get credit for
right.
it. But so I'm trying to get some information out of him on one of these typical collegiate conversations with parents in which it's mostly monosyllables. And I finally said, trying to break the ice a little bit, I said, well, how's your gaming going? And he said, well, okay, actually, it's funny that you ask. That's going really well. I go, well, yeah, what's happening? He says, well, I'm number one. And I said, well, you're like number one in your club? And he said, no. I said, like in a league or something? He goes, no. I said, well, number one what? He said, well, actually, I'm number one in the world.
Wow.
And I didn't know whether to be, like, proud or appalled.
Maybe a little of both.
Maybe both. I don't know. But he was playing a game called Heroes of New Earth and had worked his way up to the very top of that ladder. And then in something that was sort of new to me, he was invited as a result to join a pro team under the sponsorship of a firm called SK Gaming, which will be familiar to any avid gamer. They're one of the big sponsors. So all of a sudden, he went from a graduating college student to a pro gamer.
So how did you wrap your mind around that? How did you explore the world and figure out what it meant?
Well, I had already been interested in this area, and this is kind of another irony, I guess, is that I had already written this book in which the character becomes a pro gamer, and then fact and fiction sort of conflated, and there we were. So I knew a little bit about this world, but I didn't know a lot about sort of the sponsorship side of it and, you know, what that meant. It turns out that it's not exactly like getting drafted by the Boston Celtics. You know, it's not instant wealth. These kids don't start out signing big contracts. And although it's gotten bigger since those years, which is just 3 or 4 years ago, it's still much more modest in its at least as a starting point than, you know, traditional sports. So I was learning a little bit about this. At the same time, he was getting all this, getting these packages with headsets and keyboards, and of course, my main interest was trying to see if he wouldn't pass at least a little of that along to me, but I never got any of it. And then just watching, you know, sort of what happened when he was starting to train more seriously and travel to tournaments, things like that.
Well, we'll get into what it means to train and travel and participate in these tournaments and be on teams in a little while. But you said you'd already written this book. What made you want to write a young adult novel about video games?
Well, the story really started with my younger son when he was probably middle school, 13, 14. And one day he said to me, you know, Dad, I'm really not finding anything interesting to read anymore. He said, I'm not interested in reading. I said, well, what are you interested in? He said, well, you know, I kind of like playing this computer games. I said, well, I know that. I said, well, what if there was a book about a kid who played computer games? Would you read that? And he was like, well, maybe, which was really a huge advance, right, from no. Then the maybe was a good sign. So I said, let's go to the local bookstore and let's find something. So we started shopping around and talked to some booksellers, and they were sort of perplexed about this whole thing. And I was kind of amazed because it seemed to me such a big part of popular culture, particularly youth culture.
Well, it is interesting. There are books that expand on the imaginary world of video games.
It's true. There's fantasy novels that try to build a narrative out of the world of the video game. But there was nothing that I could find that was more on the realistic side of things about what happens to a kid who's really immersed in this and what could happen if they became very, very good at it. So that was the tack that I took, and I started writing that book as my son was really about the same age as the main character in my book.
Well, let's, if you would, read a little bit of the book to us, and we'll talk about the plot that you came up with.
Well, thanks for asking. I can do that. And the section that I want to read from is a little bit early in the book when the narrator, it's a first-person narrator, is talking about what it's like to be playing a game. And I think this might be relevant to the whole broader topic of gaming. And here's how it goes. In an intense game like this, you're in so deep the room around you disappears. When you're in the middle of a battle and your fingers are flying across the keyboard, you're not looking at the screen. You're not playing at a game. You're in the game. Like those science fiction movies where someone gets sucked up in a wormhole or drops through a hole in time. It's sort of like that. You get that same sense of being pulled into this other world. It's not as though you believe your body has gone anywhere, but your mind, your consciousness is actually sucked through the screen, and you're not alone. And then he goes on to talk about, you know, the creatures in the game and the landscape of the game and how you make friends in the game. And, you know, that's kind of, I think, at the heart of, you know, why this this world has become so, so popular and such a big, important part of kids' lives these days is the sort of the transcendence that occurs when you're playing a game.
Well, and you write in the novel about some of the very real friendships that come out of these gaming relationships. And that was something that you experienced with your own sons, too, where they are playing games with people who could be halfway across the country, halfway across the world, and they develop very real friendships and relationships with them.
Yeah, and this was a kind of a surprise to me as well. It's not something, of course, anyone in my generation would have experienced, but I remember my son, my older son, the one who's the big gamer, saying that he wanted to visit a friend of his. And I said, well, great. I said, you know, someone you know from college? He goes, no, not really. You know, I said, well, how do you know this kid? He says, well, you know, we're gamer friends. And he actually ended up flying to Fargo, North Dakota, of all places, to spend a week with his friend who he'd never met before, which struck me as kind of a strange thing. But I think to these kids, they don't make that distinction between virtual friends and real friends. They're just friends. And then the next twist was that he after he came back a few months later, he said, you know, my friend from North Dakota? I go, yeah, of course. He says, we're thinking of visiting another one of our friends who's on our team. I go, great, where's that? He said, Mumbai. I said, well, that's a little different order of travel complications. So they never quite made that happen.
Right. Although it's a pretty It's a pretty big vote of confidence to send your kid to North Dakota to spend a week with someone they've never seen before.
Yeah, I did do a little vetting on that. The father was a pediatrician, which sort of helped you know, assuage my my concerns. But nevertheless, you're right. It is kind of a leap in faith.
And your son's gaming, just as happens in the book with the main character, Seth, your son's gaming also started taking him not just to see a friend, but started taking him places for tournaments, right?
That's right. I remember when he his first tournament, they shipped him off, you know, the sponsor firm shipped him off to San Francisco for an event, a live event. And they stayed at the W, which is a pretty fancy hotel, you know, fancier than the hotel I would have stayed at if I was going there. So I thought, well, you know, this isn't all bad. And, you know, he had a pretty good time hanging out in San Francisco.
So
and maybe that was a harbinger of things to come because he actually lives in San Francisco now.
So have you watched the tournaments? Have you watched your son compete?
Well, not live in the video game arena, but we've been pretty supportive of his gaming across his career. When I think back, he and his brother were both big Magic the Gathering, which is a card game that has a lot of elements that are similar, I think, to the strategy involved in computer gaming. And we took him to tournaments across the country. I mean, we were in Kansas City, we were in Orlando, San Diego. You know, so this is something that sort of the same way, I guess, that, you know, Little League parents get involved in. We were involved as gaming parents.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking right now with Lawrence Tabak. He's the author of the new young adult novel, In Real Life. It's about a young man who becomes a professional video game competitor. And we're going to talk about esports this hour. Coming up in just a moment, a video game journalist will join the conversation. And you're welcome to join as well. Have you had a brush with this world? Are your children involved in this world? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about esports, the world of competitive video gaming tournaments, even people winning money, getting paid to play video games. With me this hour is Lawrence Tabak. He's the author of the new young adult novel, In Real Life, which takes place in the world of esports. And also joining us now is Sam Stewart. He's a journalism student at the University of Iowa, an aspiring video game journalist. He's doing an internship at Game Informer in Minneapolis right now. Hello, Sam.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, no problem.
And we're talking about this burgeoning world of esports, which I know is of interest to you. The term video game journalist probably makes a few people scratch their heads. So as a video game journalist, what do you see as your field? What do you do?
Well, I mean, just like any sort of popular culture, entertainment, movies, music, you know, there's always an enthusiast press, a group of people whose job it is sort of to have the knowledge about games, play games, and, you know, give their opinions on them so that hopefully the reader who is interested in the game, you know, before it comes out or whatever, knows what to expect when they get their hands on it.
So in a way, it's sort of like film reviews or music reviews, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, but it also extends to doing, you know, interviews with the game creators, sometimes interviews with, I mean, the types of esports athletes that you guys are talking about. I actually did an interview recently with an esports athlete. That was a lot of fun. So, yeah, you still get to do, outside of, you know, just the reviews and news type stuff, you get to do some actual, what people would consider more traditional journalism.
Can you give us an idea, as this world is developing, and Lawrence, I want you to help us draw some comparisons to professional sports as well, because I know that you've spent time working in the world of tennis, so maybe you can help us draw some parallels to something that a lot more of us are familiar with. But, Sam, can you give me an idea of how common are tournaments? How are people getting together across the country and across the world?
I mean, tournaments, you know, you could probably find a gaming tournament somewhere every week. There's this website called Twitch.tv, which is a website where people can, like, hook up their game consoles to their computer and stream what they're playing so that other people can watch. Well, you know, as this site got popular, of course, people were like, hey, this is an easy way to broadcast our tournaments. So, you know, you could go on there any day of the week, and if you're interested in a game, you can probably find somebody playing a tournament, whether it's just a bunch of people getting together online and playing against each other, a bunch of people meeting in one place and getting together to stream their tournament or whatever. You know, it's become such a thing now that, you know, you can probably find something to watch at any point. I know that there's one series that's big is Super Smash Brothers. It's a game that I really like watching competitively. There's actually a group that holds a tournament every single day of the week. So,
what do you get out of watching other people play a game?
You know, pretty much the same thing that people get out of watching real sports. You know, someone might enjoy watching football. I enjoy watching, you know, like a fighting game or something. It's this set of rules and abilities and things that when people really get attuned with how the game is played can sort of show you how the game can be played in ways you never thought of yourself as someone who didn't take it as seriously as these guys did. So, you know, just like interesting creative plays come out of a soccer game, interesting creative plays will come out of a game of Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat.
So you're watching people who are extremely good at what they do, which is exciting. Are you also gaining skills that you can emulate?
Yeah, I do think sometimes that watching, you know, people play games that I also enjoy, sometimes I can be like, oh my gosh, you know, I never thought about doing that. That's really smart or something. And to them, it's just this normal technique that everyone's doing. But to me, it's like, wow, that's really something. I bet I could, you know, practice that and get good and maybe get a little better myself.
So you
know, if I could jump in,
yeah.
Sorry to interrupt, but one of the things that I think is kind of particularly relevant in the book, the character, my main character, Seth, ends up going to Korea in the second half of the book to join a Korean team. And I think Sam would agree with this, that a lot of the sort of the progress in terms of the industry of gaming and the professionalization of gaming is an East Asia phenomena that is slowly catching up in the rest of the world. And as a result, if you happen to be in Korea and turn on the TV, you would find stations that broadcast gaming 24 hours a day. There's a couple stations that do that. And there's been tournaments there that have attracted as many as 100,000 live spectators. So it's pretty crazy, and yet we're moving in that direction. As I think, Sam, you probably followed the International in July.
Yep, definitely. I was watching every single one of those games.
Really? Explain for people who aren't familiar with it, what is the International?
The International is a yearly Dota 2 tournament, which is held by the developer of the game, which is Valve. It's sort of notable because four years ago when the first International happened, at that time gaming prize pools, you know, never broke $50,000 to $100,000. Well, Valve themselves put up a $1 million prize pool for that tournament. First place, I think, got $1 million was the idea, and then, you know, all the places below them got sort of smaller amounts. But every year the tournament's just gotten bigger and bigger up until this year's International, which the prize pool grew as people purchased tickets. So, you know, millions and millions of people bought a ticket to watch this thing online, and eventually the prize pool broke $10 million, which meant that the first place team received $5 million. Which was by far, I mean, I think second biggest prize pool ever given out at an esports tournament was around $2 million. So, you know, five times as big as the
right.
Second biggest prize pool ever given, it was a pretty big deal. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I just wanted to put that in context so that people understand how big that prize pool is. That's larger than the U.S. Open men's golf tournament prize pool. That's larger than the prize pool for the U.S. Open tennis tournament. It's larger than the Preakness, Belmont Stakes, and Kentucky Derby combined. I mean, it's crazy big.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and Lawrence, you mentioned the world of esports in Korea, for example, and for in other parts of Asia. This is a far more developed world. In your novel, your main character goes there to train, to join a team. This team trains to play video games 10 hours a day, and that is something that is pulled directly from real life, right?
Well, I might have understated that. Sam, do you have any experience in talking with people that are training full-time for that kind of level?
No. Actually, most of the people I've spoken to are American athletes, and that doesn't seem to be, you know, I talk to American athletes and they'll sort of talk about, oh yeah, there's a big tournament coming up in a couple weeks, I got to go to boot camp or whatever, which I think is sort of like the sort of a comparable thing, but it's not a year-round thing like it is with some of like the Korean athletes, you know.
Yeah, they're pretty obsessive, and as a result they pretty much dominate the Asian athletes. Certainly like at the international tournament we talked to, the first two teams were both Chinese teams that finished first and second.
Yep.
But the third team, the third place team, was North American. So it shows you that it's possible and probably increasingly possible that the local athletes can keep up with the Asian athletes.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of the boys, one of the young men actually on the international team grew up three doors down from me in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, wow, really? One of the EG players?
Yeah, Universe, you might have heard of
him. Oh, yeah, like, yeah, I really love watching Universe play.
Well, and okay, that introduces us to another aspect of this world. Of course, just like athletes in other sports, these athletes get to be celebrities, but they all have, I mean, they don't actually use their real names, right?
Rarely.
So how do you get to know who this is? Sam, if you love watching Universe play, do you have an idea who it is?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of these guys are public on Twitter, and like I said, they're Twitch streams you can watch, and usually people really enjoy, for some reason, when the players have like a webcam so you can sort of see them and feel like maybe you're having a conversation with them or whatever while they're playing. So yeah, it is rare for players to use their names. You know, it's sort of, even their jerseys usually just have their screen name on them, and I think that's just an evolution out of that idea that all this stuff started on computers where people only knew you by your screen name, and so rather than, you know, shed that as esports got bigger, they just kind of embraced it and said, well, you know, I want to keep my screen name. I want to be Universe. Maybe he thinks that's cooler. I think his actual name is Sahil Arora, if I'm correct.
Yeah, Sahil Arora.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're hiding. It's not like they're anonymous. It's very easy. If you just Google Universe Dota, bingo, you get a picture of the guy in his bio. So they're public personalities in a way that's pretty narrow still, though. So if you talk to the average adult, for instance, they don't even know this exists, let alone the players. But I just bumped into a UW kid the other day, and I mentioned that somehow we got talking about this, and I mentioned Universe, and he said, "You know Universe? My God, you actually know him?" And then I said, "Yeah, you know, he went to the University of Wisconsin." He said, "I went to school with you." So it's a kind of a narrow celebrity, but you know.
But they're big in their world.
They're big in their world. I mean, it's maybe like comparable to, you know, being a contestant on The Bachelor or something. You know, there's a certain segment of the population that considers that person to be famous. But I certainly wouldn't know them. The expanse of that is greater, I think, in Asia. And in fact, one of the things I talk about in my book is I manufacture sort of, you know, the sponsorship world that goes around an athlete. And so my character becomes, you know, a figure who's on billboards and in commercials. And pretty soon, you know, it eclipses the narrow interest of that world of gaming, and it's just a celebrity. And I think that will probably be the trend line, I think, in the U.S. as well, that these people will become more and more well-known outside of that narrow niche.
This hour, we're talking about the growing world of esports. With me, Lawrence Tabak. He's the author of the new young adult novel, In Real Life. And Sam Stewart, a journalism student at the University of Iowa. He's doing an internship right now at Game Informer in Minneapolis. You're welcome to join our conversation as well. 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's talk a little bit about Twitch, because this is a service that made big news just a few months ago in August, because Twitch was acquired by Amazon.com for $970 million.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just round it up to a billion.
Okay. Yeah.
Talk about.
Which is big, big business. So I mean, this started out as sort of a niche service for people who wanted to watch, and it still is, but for people who wanted to watch top video game or esports athletes play. And there is a huge amount of demand for this.
It is. Their viewership is now rivaling many cable network TV channels. And, you know, it's big business. It's also personal business, as I think you know. About 3.5 years ago, my son went to work for them when they were a startup. And his kind of entree to them was that not only was he a programmer, a software engineer, but he was also an avid and accomplished gamer, which gave him quite a bit of cred in that world. And so he was pretty happy when that sale went through, since he owned a little tiny slice of the company.
The using the term athletes to describe the people who excel at esports, I can imagine that is somewhat controversial, because when we think about an athlete, we think of someone who has worked extremely hard to become physically adept enough to compete in the kind of traditional sports that we know about. Is there controversy over using that term, Sam?
Definitely. I remember a year or two ago, an ESPN reporter did a report on the LCS, which is the sort of League of Legends comparison to sort of the International. It's another really big tournament every single year. She did this whole report on how big it was. She went to the arena and, you know, all the people and everything. And then as soon as the report's over, they kick it back to the, you know, the sports commentators, and they're all just, what is this report on? This is not a sport. This is a video game. These guys aren't athletes. They didn't put the work in. But, you know, I think anyone who has played a video game for more than, you know, an hour or two sort of quickly realizes that just like a sport, there's a skill gap. You know, you play a game and then maybe you play with your friend and he beats you and you think, okay, he's obviously put more work into it than me. You see someone beat him and you think this guy's put more work into him. And, you know, that just goes up and up and up until you get to these people who are, you know, the best in the world at these things. You know, they've put in time just like any athlete has put in time to learn every single facet of their game, whether it be something ultra complicated like Dota or League of Legends, or something simple like, I actually won't say simple. I was going to say simple like Street Fighter, but, you know, Street Fighter isn't simple either, so.
Yeah, let me just add a point to that, and that is that the dexterity, the physical skill that is required to play at the highest level of the game is not inconsequential. Mm-hmm. The average player, you know, at the highest level has to do 400 actions per minute. That's keystrokes and mouse clicks. That's if you ever watch just the hands on the keyboard of a really high end player, it looks like they're just pounding on the keyboard randomly, but of course they're not. So there is a physical skill involved, and it's certainly in terms of the mental intensity, it's crazy in terms of the concentration required. And these high end gamers are bright kids and young people. I mean, they're very, very capable people. It's not a pursuit for the faint-hearted, that's for sure.
Although, again, it's not that there is a physical component, although you're also sitting on a chair, sitting on a couch, sitting glued to a screen for many hours a day. So the idea that they are physical athletes, I think a lot of people would take issue with that.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, it's not the same. Although, you know, maybe people would compare it more closely to what it takes to be a high-level chess player. Certainly those, you know, I think the world culture sort of respects what those people do. And it's probably more comparable to that. Sam, I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it's more of the mental intensity maybe than the, you know, going to the gym, lifting weights and things. But, you know, there's definitely still a lot of the physical aspect of just, you know, how quickly your hands can move and how quickly your reaction time is. You know, we talked a little bit about Evil Geniuses, the American team that got third at the International. Well, they've got a player right now. His sort of screen name is Fear. He's about 26 years old, and he's considered to be like the old guy in the Dota community.
Right.
He's still a player, but the other members of EG are like 17, 19, early 20s, and there's talk that Fear is like on his way out because he's so old. You know, his reaction time is going to start dulling, and he's not going to be able to play at the top level at 26 years old.
Wow.
He actually had to miss the International because of repetitive stress injuries.
I was going
to
ask about carpal tunnel and repetitive stress injuries.
He had an injury in his arm and had to skip out on the tournament, sadly.
We're going to take
occupational hazard for sure.
Right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the rapidly growing world of esports this hour, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions, with your stories, with your comments, with your thoughts about what your kids are doing, playing their video games, or your grandkids. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Lawrence Tabak is here. He is the author of the new young adult novel, In Real Life. And Sam Stewart is a journalism student at the University of Iowa. He's doing an internship at Game Informer in Minneapolis this semester. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the growing world of esports. And with me is Sam Stewart. He's a journalism student at the University of Iowa. And he's also an aspiring video game journalist doing an internship at Game Informer in Minneapolis. With us also, Lawrence Tabak. He's the author of the new young adult novel, In Real Life, which takes place in the world of esports. And you are welcome to join the conversation as well. Where do you think this field is going in the future? 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And there's a very funny cartoon that has been shared with us this hour. And it was published in the cartoon paper at Iowa State University. It says, the headline is Rumor ISU Dropping Football for Esports. And then there's a whole line of gamers sitting on a couch in front of a big screen. They've all got their laptops open, headphones on, and the thought bubble is, we're full-ride varsity video game athletes. And we've tweeted that cartoon, so you can see it on our Twitter feed at IPR Talk. But do you see this, I mean, obviously it's not going to take the place of football, but do you see this becoming mainstream enough that it grows into something that could happen at colleges and be something that would become part of attracting students who might be among your top programmers, that kind of thing? Sam?
Yeah, actually, this is something that has already happened. Maybe Lawrence would know the specifics. There was definitely a big name college recently that had a League of Legends team where actual students were given scholarships to come play against other universities in League of Legends. And it's no surprise when you look at the Twitch stream numbers and you see that 300,000 people were watching this tournament live on the internet, as well as a bunch more in person and through other ways of watching. That the college would say, hey, if these guys can get hundreds of thousands of viewers, maybe we can get sort of a college league that can get a comparable amount of people.
And Lawrence, what do you think?
Yes. Well, it's an interesting phenomena because what's happening, of course, is that there's an aging that's taking place, so that young parents today are likely to be gamers themselves. And so the question I kind of ask myself is, what happens as the population slowly ages up and with the background of having this as an important part of their lives? And one of the things I think you'll see is within, say, 10 years, is that you're going to see, this is my prediction, that just like we have stage parents and little league dads, there's going to be gaming parents who are pushing their kids to practice more hours a day, so that they can become successful in this pursuit. I mean, it sounds like an absurd possibility.
It's making me shake my head, Lawrence. I'll give that to you.
That I predict. But I do think that there's a recognition that this is a big part of sort of popular culture and youth culture. And the fact that it becomes sort of institutionalized is sort of what Americans do. I mean, think about it. If we have competitive cheerleading, we're probably going to have competitive gaming as a part of the institutional life in America.
Yeah, and if I could jump in real quick, as I was here at Game Informer a few weeks back, we did like a 24-hour gaming marathon for charity, and there was actually a little boy who came with his parents here who had a sort of a degenerative bone disease. Really his bones were really weak. He couldn't partake in sports and things, but he was very passionate about League of Legends. you know, it was great. You know, you could talk to him and he would just like, yo, yeah, I love League of Legends. I play it every day with my friends. I mentioned I was a Dota 2 player and he kind of rolled his eyes at me, which I thought was pretty funny. You know, those games are kind of competing. So, you know, what about these kids that maybe have, that can't partake in football or can't partake in baseball, you know, but they still want to be a part of this sort of team sport mentality? Well, you know, I could definitely see him being the kind of kid who would grow up to love to see, you know, a League of Legends program at a college.
Yeah, I've read some things about the fact that the children who are growing up today are digital natives, and that is without a doubt true. Although one of the articles I read pointed out that kids are very comfortable with technology, but the way that technology is packaged now, they get a tablet and they don't have to understand how it works to make it do amazing things. Do you think that to be a great gamer, you have to have an understanding of programming, Sam?
Oh, definitely not. I'm sure that if you talk to a lot of the top gamers, I'm sure a lot of them don't know much, you know, coding or programming, but when it comes to their game, they definitely probably understand every aspect of it. So, you know, while they may not know how to, you know, go in and like create the mods to the game or whatever that people do or program or help design the game that they're playing, they can probably definitely tell you every little detail about how each thing interacts with every other thing in the game. So it's a different kind of specialty when it comes to the technology.
Well, I wonder,
I think if you reverse that question, Charity, and ask, do the programmers know how to play the game?
True.
I think you'd find the answer would be yes, of course they do. That it's sort of like, you know, just part and parcel with
right.
what they do as people.
Well, I'm just wondering, as far as, you know, trying to attract great gamers to your university, that kind of thing. I mean, what would the trade-off be in terms of programming skills or other life skills that you would want in a university student?
Well, you know, I know this isn't a direct answer to your question, but I do want to address it, which is that, I mean, I've really tried to make this true for my own children who had this gaming interest, and that is to make sure that there was balance in their lives. So if you think back to our earlier part of the conversation where I was talking about trying to find reading material for my gaming son, it's because I really thought it was important for him to be a reader as well as a gamer. And, you know, both my kids were varsity athletes in high school. So we felt that, you know, being active and having a sporting interest, a lifetime sport interest, was important. And I think that's true all across the board. So when you talk about, you know, what might happen at the collegiate level, I think it's just part of the spectrum of activities that kids are interested in. And it shouldn't be the sole pursuit of any, you know, sort of healthy individual.
Let's go to the phones, because Ryan is on the line now in Center Point. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. And you are the co-founder of, tell me about the Iowa Land League.
The Iowa Land League is actually kind of dead now.
Okay.
We've been taken over. Well, we've kind of volunteered our services full time to MegCon, which is Iowa's biggest LAN party right now, biggest gaming convention.
All right, some of us have the outdated terminology for LAN. It still means local area network, but you're talking about a bunch of gamers who actually get together and have tournaments and host tournaments. This is not how you get on the internet with your computer anymore.
Correct. So we're kind of bringing the old school back. LAN parties are getting more and more popular. There for a while, they kind of fell out of favor, but they're coming back. This year, we had our event in July and had about 200 people show up for it, which is far more than we've ever had in Iowa. So it was a really good time. Yeah.
And when you say 200 people in Iowa, are you drawing people from all over the state, or is it really in this sort of a northeastern Iowa or eastern Iowa corridor that you're in?
We drew people from all over the Midwest. We actually had people fly out from California to come to our event. So, yeah.
And you're also coming up with prize money for your tournaments?
Yeah. So we charge a small entry fee, which all goes 100% towards prize pool for our tournaments. And then we also run a Kickstarter campaign, a crowdfunding campaign, to help us, you know, rent our facility and pay for our internet. And then all of our money that we make off concessions and everything goes right back into prize pool.
And what do you have that attracts people from California? Why would somebody come to one of your tournaments?
It's all about the atmosphere. Gamers are always, you know, thought of as like a reclusive group of people that sit in their room and play video games, and it's not like that at all. We really like to get together with each other, and it's so much fun to just be competitive in one area. You know, you can be competitive online, but there's nothing like beating your friend in the finals of a League of Legends tournament when they're sitting across the table from you.
Do you try to do anything to set your tournaments apart from other gatherings like this, or is it part of a circuit throughout the year?
Yeah, it's kind of just like a circuit throughout the year. We don't really try to compete with other LAN parties. Everybody in the LAN scene in the Midwest is really nice. We'll, you know, talk to them and, when are you hosting your event? Okay, we'll host our event, you know, the next month so that nothing overlaps. And there's a lot of collaboration going on right now in the Midwest, and it's really cool.
How did you get involved?
My high school did LAN parties for the computer club during high school as like a reward for fixing teacher computers and stuff like that. And so that's how I got started originally. And then, you know, lots of basement LANs with my friends during high school. And then during college, there was a computer club at my college that I was in, which hosted LAN parties every month. And I got together with some guys from Defrag, which used to be a really popular LAN party in the Amana area. And that kind of went under, and we started MegCon, and that's where we are now.
And having spent all of this time gaming when you were in high school and college and being so heavily involved in this now, does that dovetail with your career, with what you do?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm a network administrator right now for a high school in Iowa. So I don't think I would be where I'm at now if I didn't have gaming. You know, building my first PC when I was in ninth grade from scratch would never have happened, and it never would have sparked my interest if it wasn't for gaming.
It sounds like a lot of fun, Ryan. Where do you see it going in the future?
Right now, the biggest LAN party in the United States is currently QuakeCon in Texas, and we're aiming for that. We want to be the QuakeCon of the Midwest, hopefully. So it's only – our numbers doubled. We've only had MegCon for 2 years, and we've doubled in size, so hopefully we keep that growth up.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for calling and giving us some insight this hour.
Yeah, thank you.
So I want to ask you, Sam, because video game journalism is a fairly new field, and we talked about it as a field where you sort of cover new games that are coming out and a cultural review kind of position. But do you see the field morphing to spend more time covering esports and these e-athletes and all of these different organizations?
Definitely. I mean, I don't feel that any of the big sort of well-known video game publications like Game Informer, like IGN or Polygon, to name a few other big sites, I don't think any of them have quite cracked it yet. I think everyone in the industry knows that this is a thing that's happening. You know, League of Legends is the most played game in the world. Dota is also making millions of dollars with these with their game and having these huge tournaments every year. Everyone's aware that this is something that we need to cover, but it's kind of an odd thing to have to cover. You know, I really like watching Dota, but, you know, to get, you know, it costs a lot of money to get to the tournaments. So, you know, maybe the site says, are we really going to put up the $1,000 to send them out to this tournament and do this coverage? Maybe it seems a little risky to them. You know, is our community even going to be interested in this kind of coverage? And another thing that I think is sort of a problem is a lot of the best analysis, just like with real sports, a lot of the best analysis and coverage is being done within the community itself. You know, previous players become commentators, which is kind of, you know, it's a thing that happens in real sports as well. You know, a lot of the big commentators are previous, you know, football players and stuff. You know, if someone retires from playing Dota, they become a Dota commentator, and they're the people who can give some of the best insight into what's going on. So, you know, it's really hard for some gaming journalists to compete in that space.
Sure. I would have a hard time following any of the action,
yeah.
I'm sure. Lawrence, with this book, you've been trying to get the attention of video game journalists. And I've seen in interviews you actually have mentioned that it's kind of hard to get their attention because they're so focused on the games. Have you had luck trying to get video game journalists to pay attention to you and to broaden their idea of what they are covering?
Well, Sam, I hope you'll help me there. But I think that observation is correct. And my take is that at this sort of early stage in the life of this particular world and this kind of journalism, it's still quite narrow in scope. I don't think many of the sites are yet sort of made the leap to figure out what their readers are interested in outside of that narrow scope of gaming. You know, if you do a Venn diagram, I'm sure that the world of readers and gamers overlaps to a great extent, but they don't think about, you know, I don't think the gaming sites and the gaming journalists are thinking about the broader cultural interests of their readers. They're really focused just on that, you know, core activity. And I think that'll change over time, though.
So we're going to see a lot of development. This is an email from Steve. He says, keeping with what was said on replacing conventional sports as relating to participants, how about thinking that each gamer can't go into the NFL or equivalent when they grow up? Positive careers for superior eye-hand coordinated people would be in medicine, with surgeons who use laparoscopic devices or any microsurgery techniques, or any radio-controlled devices that need the superior eye-hand coordination, such as operating drones in support of our military needs, as opposed to boots on the ground. Perhaps we should look at this as a plus with children, not as much as a get off the ground or get off the couch and go out and play. I'm still going to keep saying that. But Lawrence, do you see this when you look at your boys, when you look at the friends that they've made in this gaming world? Do you see that kind of potential?
Yeah, I think so. I think because the world, it requires a certain amount of dexterity and sort of, you know, just competency on a computer. There's some games on the internet where you can compete as a typist, or test on the internet where you can see how fast you can type. And I'm always stunned when my kids are, you know, I look over their shoulder and they're playing one of these games and they're typing at, you know, 120, 130 words per minute. Well, that's not a bad skill to have in terms of, you know, just your work life. You can be a lot more productive than you can, you know, hunting and pecking. So I do think that the caller makes a good point in that in a world that is more and more digital, having those digital skills, whether you develop them, you know, playing a game or not, is going to be valuable.
Well, Lawrence Tabak, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Lawrence Tabak is the author of the new young adult novel In Real Life, which takes place in the world of esports. And Sam Stewart, thank you.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Sam Stewart is a journalism student at the University of Iowa. He's doing an internship right now at Game Informer in Minneapolis. Talk of Iowa is produced by Emily Woodbury, Dennis Reese, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. On the show tomorrow, wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We're going to talk about the wildlife of Brazil. This is Talk of Iowa.